From ABC News, World News This Week. I'm Gil Fox, ABC News. Listen.
What a beautiful thing. Michael comes back, the players come back. It's a beautiful thing.
The American people are demanding term limits because they are tired of having representatives who come to Washington and never leave.
Everybody's looking for ways and means how to kill people or die and not to live.
I feel as though I'm standing on magic legs in a special effects process shot that is too unbelievable to imagine.
The people and stories that made headlines when World News This Week continues.
Hi, David Garner again, president of Connect Long Distance. And I've just taken a phone call from a Mr. Pete Warren, who owns a small but thriving office supply company right on the border of Indiana and Illinois. Now, even though most of his best customers are right across the street, due to a fluke of arcane zoning laws and geography, he can only reach them by making out-of-state long-distance calls. As you can imagine, the expense is really killing him. In fact, he's concerned that he might have to pack up his company and move across the street to Illinois. Well, I assured him that if he switched over to Connect, we could save him up to 20% on his long-distance bills. And with those kinds of savings, he'd be able to stay right where he is. Of course, with our nationwide fiber optic technology, his customers will think he's calling them from right across the street, which, in this case, he is. So if you're a small business person, give us a call at 1-800-LONG-DISTANCE. That's 1-800-LONG-DISTANCE. See, we're saving you money already.
After 232 days, the baseball strike ended this week.
What a beautiful thing. Michael comes back, the players come back. It's a beautiful thing.
But Chicago Cubs first baseman Mark Grey shouldn't pack his bags for spring training yet. The baseball owners were unsure as the week ended whether to let the players back or lock them out of the stadiums.
All this does is delay making a deal with the players. This game cannot go on under the current economic conditions, and we have to have a settlement.
Philadelphia Phillies owner Bill Giles and the other owners are upset that a federal judge had issued an injunction restoring free agent bidding and collective bargaining, two issues at the heart of a dispute between the players and the owners. The players' executive board had voted to end the strike if the judge issued that injunction. Donald Fear represents the players.
If both sides wanted to be, this could be an opportunity to bargain an agreement out. And it seems to me that we ought to do our level best on both sides to seize that opportunity. We're prepared to do so, and I hope and expect that the clubs will be prepared to do so also.
And so the owners were left to make the next move. ABC's Tim Scheld explains their lockout option.
For a lockout to be declared, 21 of the 28 owners have to vote in favor of it. Many believe the support just isn't there for a lockout. The chief reason is it's too risky. This court case will go on to an administrative hearing, and if the owners lose that, they could be liable for back wages and damages totaling more than $1 billion.
The threat of losing millions more has some owners, like George Steinbrenner of the Yankees, leaning against a lockout.
I have to get all the facts, but as presently inclined, I feel that there's too much more of a downside than there would be an upside to locking out at this particular point.
John Reddy delivers, and that's drilled.
Replacement baseball continued. The fill-ins for the Dodgers and Angels made some exciting plays Friday night, but at the stadium ticket booth in Miami, where opening day is scheduled for Sunday, Scott Rubinczyk wanted his money back.
I'm returning my season tickets for the first homestand.
Why is that?
Just not really interested in replacement baseball. It's not the same without having the regular players on the field.
While most Americans waited for familiar faces to return to the stadium, they tired of the same old players in Congress. So the Republicans promised last fall in their contract with America to pass an amendment to the Constitution ensuring term limits. That promise was broken this week, but not before heated debate. Arizona Republican John Shadag.
The arrogance of saying those who are here are the only ones who have the wisdom to govern this nation is dead wrong.
Florida Republican Charles Kennedy.
The American people are demanding term limits because they are tired of having representatives who come to Washington and never leave.
Michigan Republican Dave Camp.
We have the opportunity to again make our Congress a citizen legislature.
Then term limits opponents rose to speak. Maryland Democrat Kwesi Mfume taunted his opponents.
There's nothing in there that says you have to stay here. You can leave. In fact, if you believe in 6 years, please go.
Illinois Democrat Richard Durbin said term limits would let flourish the very ills they were to root out.
Let me tell you what a House of Representatives populated by lame ducks, idle rich, dim-witted short-timers means. It's a dream come true for the lobbyist, for the special interest, and the bureaucrats.
But perhaps the most passionate rebuke of term limits came from a prominent Republican. Illinois' Henry Hyde had been in Congress 20 years. His tenure is typical of what many Americans in polls have indicated they're against, the career politician. For 15 minutes, Hyde told colleagues term limits would be disastrous for the nation.
What successful person in midlife will leave a career at 50 and try and pick up the pieces at 56 or 62? This job will become a sabbatical for the well-to-do elite and bored retirees.
Congress then voted on four different measures, all of which limited terms up to 12 years. All went down to defeat. The dissent came overwhelmingly from Democrats, leaving Speaker Newt Gingrich claiming disbelief.
It's almost like they managed to sleepwalk through the election last year and not learn a thing.
The average length of service in Congress is 11 years. 4 decades ago, congressmen averaged 7 years in office. The limo driver, the sky cap, and the house guest all took the witness stand. From Los Angeles, ABC's Greg Jarrett has our weekly wrap-up from the O.J. Simpson murder trial.
There were no more smiles in the O.J. Simpson courtroom from star witness Cato Kalin. The prosecution was also in a bad mood from the start, as the defense began the week asking the judge to sanction the district attorney's office for asking Kalin the previous week about an incident in 1989. Several years before Kalin knew the Simpsons. Christopher Darden said he had slipped the question to Marcia Clark, so it was all his fault.
It's my question. So when you say it's out of the blue, perhaps it was out of the blue. I'm here to do more than just die on my sword for Ms. Clark and for the prosecution. I mean,
expression.
I asked
fall,
a question,
fall on
Judge.
My sword.
Pardon?
Fall on my sword.
Oh, well, I want to fall and die on it and go somewhere else if I can. But, it's my fault.
A little later, Clark shocked the court.
I'm going to ask leave of the court to take this witness as a hostile witness.
The judge asked the jury to disregard Clark's request, but then it was evident that he had granted it.
You changing your testimony now, Mr. Kalin?
No.
Was he upset or wasn't he when he talked about Nicole and her tight dresses?
No, not real upset.
Kalin told Robert Shapiro on cross-examination that Clark had made him a little nervous.
Has the questions that have just been put to you made you nervous at all?
Yes.
Are you afraid of Miss Clark?
Not afraid of her, no.
Does she scare you?
No.
Does she make you uncomfortable?
Well, certain questions, yes.
Why is that?
Because I'm trying to do my best.
And do you think she's given you the opportunity to do your best and to be fair?
Objection, Your Honor. Sustained.
Kalin later talked to ABC's Barbara Walters about his relationship with Clark for ABC's 2020.
Do you think that Marcia Clark felt that you had betrayed her?
Well, I'll tell you, when I was being asked questions from the defense, I was very aware of her sitting at her table with shuffling of papers and eye contact and certain looks.
Scolding you by her looks?
Scolding me, yes. That I was the schoolboy, the teacher. I was being hit with the ruler.
What about the rumors that Kalin was high when he testified? A lot of people seemed to think so correspondent Walters asked the question.
You were twitching, your body was moving, your face was moving. You know, some people thought you were on drugs. You know that? Did you hear that?
There was rumors about drugs with me.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know about the first time I witnessed stand, but no, it was nerves and coffee, I think.
Limo driver Alan Park gave the prosecution what they wanted. At 10:22, when he pulled up looking for the address on the curb, he didn't see any white Ford Bronco.
At the time that you were looking at that location, the address on the curb, did you see a car parked in that location?
No, I didn't.
And there was no one home.
At 10:40,
yes.
What happened next?
That is when I got out of the car. And there was an intercom at the gate. And I was using that intercom to buzz the house. And I buzzed it, and there was no answer.
Park told the prosecution that he saw a figure in the shadows of the estate just before he got an answer from the house.
6 foot, 200 pounds.
6 foot, 200 pounds?
All dark clothing.
And could you tell anything else about this person?
No.
Could you tell whether the person was Caucasian or African American?
Black.
Then it was time for luggage. The luggage Simpson took to Chicago. Retired judge and special master Delbert Wong is in charge of such evidence as it is collected. He went out to get the bags.
Directing your attention to the golf bag in front of you, Defendant's Exhibit 1063. Do you recognize this bag?
Yes.
On what date and at what time did you recover that bag?
I recovered the bag yesterday.
Okay. What time of the day, if you recall?
About 4 o'clock.
Then the skycap from Los Angeles International Airport came on the stand to tell more tales of the luggage.
Was Mr. Simpson carrying anything when you saw him?
Yes, he had a bag.
What kind of bag?
Like a little duffel bag.
A duffel bag?
Yeah.
What color was it?
It was dark colored, too, from what I remember. I didn't pay specific attention to it.
The prosecution trying to hint heavily that Simpson had a bag with him containing bloody clothes and a murder knife. They say he may have thrown it away in a trash can at the airport. They want the can and another witness who saw the defendant buy that trash can. Finally, interruptions due to DNA arguments. Then a neighbor of Simpson's came forward to say he did not see the Bronco parked at the Rockingham curb at the time of the killings. Charles Kane says he hasn't been following the case very carefully. Next week, a ruling on whether the defense may contest DNA testing and results. Then we'll get into technical issues, evidence gathering, and more. Greg Jarrett, ABC News, Los Angeles. A musical welcome for President Clinton Friday as he became the first U.S. leader in over 60 years to visit Haiti. The president was there to watch American military forces hand over security for the troubled Caribbean nation to a United Nations peacekeeping force. Then the visit allowed the president to enjoy a foreign policy triumph, the restoration of Haiti to democracy. ABC's John Bascom has details.
On a sunny, sultry day outside the gleaming white National Palace in Port-au-Prince, the president of Haiti, Jean-Bertrand Aristide, welcomed his American friends who helped restore his democracy.
Friend of Haiti, a warm hello to all of you.
President Clinton said the United States would do all it could to ensure free elections in Haiti this summer.
We celebrate the restoration of democracy to your country.
And as the ceremony ended, a small white dove came to perch on top of a bulletproof screen in front of the president's, a fitting reminder that the road to peace here in Haiti can be dangerous. John Bascom, ABC News, with the president in Port-au-Prince.
The two Americans sentenced last week to 8 years in an Iraqi jail saw their first visitors Wednesday. David Diliberti and William Barloon spoke to a Western journalist and a Polish diplomat. The visitors carried a message to the prisoners' wives. Kathy Diliberti told us.
Dave sent me a message as far as to tell me that he loved me, he loved his family, and that he didn't want anyone to forget him, to try to do everything to obtain his immediate release.
But does everything include military force? Senate Republican Richard Lugar thinks so.
Iraq is one country where we know that there are a lot of options because we have already explored that in the Desert Storm and in its aftermath. This is one country that has been well targeted and well intelligenced.
Lugar is expected to run for president. His suggestion of sending the U.S. military to free the two Americans angered the Clinton administration, which felt Lugar was meddling. Those two Americans were taken prisoner after they crossed the Iraqi border with Kuwait, apparently by mistake. Iraq says the men are spies. The U.S. is trying to get two men out of another outlaw nation, but for entirely different reasons. These two are Libyans, and they're wanted for their role in the 1988 bombing of a Pan Am flight over Scotland. The Clinton administration wants to slap a worldwide oil embargo on Libya. Terrorism expert Brian Jenkins says that oil is to Libya like honey is to a bear.
If you are imposing economic sanctions, then going after Libya's oil exports certainly is the most effective way of doing so.
Libya denies it's connected to the Pan Am bombing. Don't Ask, Don't Tell took a dive this week. The Pentagon's policy on gays in the military was ruled unconstitutional by a federal judge. The judge said the Pentagon was violating its members' rights. But Pentagon spokesman Kenneth Bacon said the judge hadn't changed the military's mind.
We believe our policy is constitutional, and we intend to defend the policy.
This dispute will likely reach the Supreme Court. A fascinating piece of medical news could help doctors solve the AIDS puzzle.
This may be a very great breakthrough, and we may look back on this in 10 years and say, wow, this was an important moment. But we don't know that yet. And to really get excited about this, I think would be premature.
That's Joseph Ferrer of the San Francisco AIDS Foundation talking about a boy who now no longer has AIDS.
The boy was born with the AIDS-causing HIV virus, but no longer shows any sign of it. AIDS expert Dr. Alejandro Dorenbaum says if doctors can learn how the boy defeated the disease, finding a cure for AIDS might be easier.
It is very likely that the immune system of the baby was able to handle the virus and destroy it as it does with other viral infections.
That boy is now 5 years old.
Get taken by a super dope brother who is brother. Word to the mother.
Gangster rap found mainstream appeal in the late 80s with its tales of violence, sex, and drug use. The rapper credited with helping turn the genre into a multi-million dollar business died of AIDS this week. Eric Wright was known as Eazy-E. In the days before his death, the 31-year-old said he'd fathered 7 children with 6 different women. Actor Carol O'Connor received a phone call this week that may anguish him forever.
He called me today and told me that he was going to shoot himself.
O'Connor's 33-year-old son, Hugh, was despondent and threatened to kill himself. O'Connor phoned the police. They raced to the scene, but they were too late. After O'Connor arrived, he told reporters his son had a drug addiction and dreaded the prospect of another round in rehab. Carol O'Connor then delivered a message to the drug dealer named Harry, who he believes supplied his son with cocaine.
I want to see you someday, Harry. I'm looking to see you someday, Harry. I hope you come and see me.
Parents worried whether their child uses drugs can now buy a home drug testing kit.
It's called Drug Alert. It sells for $19.95. And it permits the parent of a child who they may suspect of using narcotics or being involved somehow in the use of narcotics to take samples from the child's quarters, his books, his telephone, his automobile, to determine if he has been exposed to these substances.
Stanley Bender heads the company that makes Drug Alert. Drugs did not kill Boston Celtics star Reggie Lewis. Reporter Carl Stevens explains.
In Boston, we've heard and read the reports for weeks that Reggie Lewis may have died because he used cocaine. The state's chief medical examiner, Dr. Richard Evans, heard those same reports and spearheaded a full investigation and presented an answer to a very troubling question.
Toxicology screens performed at the time of death found no evidence of cocaine or other drug abuse.
Dr. Evans said Lewis died when several different problems caused his heart to beat irregularly. Cocaine, said the doctor, had nothing to do with it. Carl Stevens for ABC News, Boston.
Pope John Paul II spoke out this week against what he called the spreading culture of death at work in the world. The papal encyclical condemned mercy killing, abortion, and fetal research. How will the Pope's message play with American bishops? Thomas Daly is bishop of the Brooklyn Archdiocese.
Right now, in our time, in this world as it is, these are the things we've got to be talking about. Because we're living in a culture of death. Everybody's looking for ways and means how to kill people or die and not to live. And he's saying we've got to build up a culture of life.
But a group called Catholics for Free Choice says the Pope is sexist.
The only side he sees is that women were made to reproduce. And that's the role they should embrace. And anything that interferes with that is, as far as he's concerned, immoral.
Mylene Moran of Catholics for Free Choice. There was new information released this week about the assassination of America's only Catholic president. ABC's Barry Serafin tells us one FBI memo is considered particularly revealing.
The memo has long interested reporters and historians because it indicates that Lee Harvey Oswald talked about killing President Kennedy before the assassination. The 1964 memo was written by then FBI Director J. Edgar Hoover to a lawyer on the Warren Commission. It quotes from a meeting following the assassination between FBI sources and Cuban leader Fidel Castro. Castro told them Oswald had stormed into the Cuban embassy in Mexico City before the assassination and demanded a visa to visit Cuba. When he was refused, Oswald left, allegedly saying, "I'm going to kill Kennedy for this." Barry Saroff in ABC News, Washington.
Mike Tyson confirmed this week that 3 years of prison hadn't softened him.
I will fight again.
5 days after completing his sentence for raping a beauty pageant contestant, Tyson said he was reuniting with a controversial boxing promoter.
I also will confirm that Don King will continue to promote my fight. Don is the greatest promoter in the world, as we know.
One report claims Don King has given Mike Tyson $35 million as payment toward future bouts. And while Mike Tyson may have had 35 million reasons to be happy this week, Michael Jordan had 55.
Come 51!
A new record here.
Harper and Jill, Michael.
And that's how it sounded as Michael Jordan capped his return from baseball by scoring 55 points, the most ever in the NBA. The Bulls beat the Knicks in that game. There's another runner in the race for president.
Today, I offer my ideas, my experience, and my energy to the American people to lead this great nation into the 21st century as the next president of the United States.
Yeah. Pennsylvania Republican Arlen Specter announced his candidacy on the grounds of the Washington Monument. Up next...
My name's Forrest Gump. People call me Forrest Gump.
An Oscar roundup when World News This Week continues.
Picture a playground filled with four-year-old children. Picture each face so full of promise. Well, which child deserves to be read to? This one? Or is it that one over there? Which child will get a hot lunch? Who will have a chance to sing? The choice is yours. Volunteer for Head Start. With your help, more low-income preschool children can get what other children already have. Call 1-800-27-START for more information and a brochure on volunteer opportunities with Head Start in your community. Change the world of a child, and you change the world.
Brought to you by Head Start, Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
The music of Selena had sold over 2 million records, earned her a Grammy, and made her an idol with her style of Tejano music. The 23-year-old American-born singer was shot to death in Corpus Christi, Texas, Friday. Police have charged the head of her fan club with that killing.
And the Oscar goes to... Forrest Gump, Wendy Finneman, Steve Fish.
Forrest Gump won six Academy Awards this week. Its star Tom Hanks was voted Best Actor for a second year in a row.
I feel as though I'm standing on magic legs in a special effects process shot that is too unbelievable to imagine and far too costly to make a reality.
You went too far today.
Bridget Bardot strips for millions. She's a goddess. I sunbathe topless and I'm a scandal.
You're not Bridget Bardot, remember?
The manic depressive wife of an army officer, Jessica Lange, played in the film Blue Sky, won her Best Actress Oscar.
I want to thank the Academy so much. This is such a wonderful honor, especially for a little film that seemed to have no future, and it's just such a great honor.
Martin Landau was voted Best Supporting Actor for his performance as Bela Lugosi in a film about a director of B-movies, Ed Wood.
Too constrictive. I can't even fold my arms.
Gee, Mr. Lugosi, I've never had any complaints.
This is the most uncomfortable coffin I've ever been in. Your selection is quite shoddy. You're wasting my time.
And Diane Wiest took home a Best Supporting Actress award for her portrayal of a washed-up actress in Bullets Over Broadway.
No, don't speak. Don't speak. Don't speak. No, silence.
The much-heralded Pulp Fiction won just a single award, that Oscar for Best Screenplay. And those are the people and stories that made world news this week. World News This Week was written and produced by Steve Jones. I'm Gil Fox, ABC News, New York.
This has been a presentation of ABC News. More Americans get their news from ABC News than from any other source.